every client is different. Every client in the relationship with their animal is different and their situation is different. And so if we don't learn a little bit about that first, we almost set ourselves up for running into challenges in making or applying the evidence-based approach that we want to solving whatever issue that we've identified in veterinary medicine.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Blending passion for customer success with love for pet nutrition, Trow Nutrition. Chemin Pet Food and Rendering is dedicated to supporting longer, fuller pet lives. Biorigin, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Rengen Pet Nutrition, we partner with a purpose.
Hello, and welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Jan Sugodolski, and I'm dedicating you to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the pet food science industry. So get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episodes. And it's my big honor to welcome Dr. Jason Koh as our guest today. Jason is a professor at the Department of Population Medicine at the Ontario Veterinary College in Guelph, Canada. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks, Jan.
And our topic today is going to be, and because Jason is an expert in communication, so we're going to talk today about how can we help with communication foster relationships between for veterinarians and the clients, specifically about nutrition. And so, Jason, usually what I like to do is often let my guests introduce themselves. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about your career path, where you started, and how did you end up, you know, focusing on communication as your research?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Jan. And so when I think back to the starting, I think like many veterinarians, you know, it was the relationship, my own relationships with animals, which got me interested in veterinary medicine to start with. And so as I went through vet school, you know, one of my key responses to people was that my purpose in veterinary medicine was to be able to take care of those, my own relationships with animals when I graduated. And so I was very interested in the human-animal relationship, the human-animal bond, and kind of kept that in the back pocket, even when I went out into veterinary practice. And I'd kind of sowed a few seeds when I left the Ontario Veterinary College as a new graduate that at some point I'd be interested in coming back and exploring. And so a few years out into practice, and I did mixed animal practice because I had very broad interests, I was contacted and invited back by Dr. Cindy Adams to come back and do some work, and I was still very interested in the human-animal bond. And at the time, the Ontario Veterinary College was the first school in North America that had changed and made communication part of the core curriculum. So I went back to the Ontario Veterinary College to look at human-animal bond, and they were doing this communication research. And so there was this real interest or proposal that maybe I'd want to explore the communication aspect of veterinary medicine. And at that point in time, I actually wasn't interested in that. I saw it as being important, but it wasn't where I was going to focus my career. I was really interested in the relationship between people and animals. And so as part of that graduate work, I was responsible for overseeing students in a wellness clinic. So I was down there overseeing their medicine, but as part of it, the new curriculum in communication, I was responsible for coaching them on their communication. And a couple of months into that role, I remember one very specific instance where a young man and his sister came in and they had a cat that wasn't doing well. And I was observing through a two-way mirror, a fourth-year student interacting with this young man and his sister. And you could just see the stress in the interaction starting to increase. And I thought, you know, I need to go in and support the student, support these clients in terms of what is going on in this situation. And so I slipped into the room, acknowledged the student, and introduced myself to the young man and his sister. And the first thing I said is, I can see that you're really stressed about this situation. We're going to work with you to see what's going on and see what we can do for you and your animal. And you could just see the body of the clients change in that moment. And that was the moment where my career trajectory changed, where I went into Cindy's office and said, that communication work you're doing, I think that's really important and I'm interested. And that was the start of my 20-year career looking at really the human side of veterinary medicine. And so from there, finished off my PhD looking at client communication in the examination room and how that impacts various outcomes of veterinary care, rolled into my faculty position where I've been very fortunate to, in the last 5 years, have VCA Canada Chair in Relationship Centered Veterinary Medicine, which has gone beyond the veterinary client relationship to really look at all relationships in veterinary practice and the impacts that those have for us as veterinary professionals, for the veterinary team, but also the clients and patients, because I think it is the relationship that is at the core of everything we do. It's really about the nature and quality of those relationships that impacts the outcomes that we all strive for, regardless of what the topic might be in veterinary practice today. So that's sort of how I started, you know, interest in my own relationships and got to this point where that's my life, is studying relationships in veterinary medicine.
That is amazing. So you call it kind of the relationship-centered veterinary medicine. Can you tell us a little bit what is this term really encompass?
Yeah, so from my perspective, it really is considering all of the relationships that exist within veterinary practice. So that even consists of the relationship we have with ourselves in terms of being in check with kind of our feelings, our bias, the things that drive us in our interactions every day, because those play a huge influence in how we interact with others. So the first thing is being in touch with what's going on for you and being conscious of those so that we can hold attention to that. Obviously, there's the relationship between people and their animals, which is the crux of it. It's the relationships around that, I would say, in veterinary medicine that really support an individual and their pet. And so by looking at all of those relationships, including the relationship veterinary professionals have with their clients, the relationship that veterinary professionals have with each other in a practice, also looking at relationships outside of the practice. So, you know, we're thinking about the Pet Science podcast. It's not only veterinary medicine, but what are the relationships with other industry partners in terms of a veterinary practice? And how do we build a relationship-centered approach, which really at the foundation is centered around communication and building that trust? And so when we think about relationships, it often is the relationships that we're developing through communication. And it is that communication that really becomes the bridge to take the knowledge that we have, the great evidence that you develop in your role, Jan, in terms of research, and putting that in the hands of first veterinary professionals, which comes probably from you as an academic or comes from industry, and then thinking about how does that veterinary professional take that and build a relationship where they can communicate that with a client, with the ultimate goal being to support that relationship between the client and their animal. And so all those relationships are key to sharing that knowledge, which then the only way it's going to get to where we want it in terms of benefiting the health and well-being of animals is by making sure we have a strong bridge at all of those different points in relationship.
So how do you, so for example, also there's a lot of obviously, you know, paths that we can afterwards dissect a little bit, and we're going to afterwards focus on the nutrition itself, right? Because that's a very probably complicated, sensitive topic. But as an example, so what is the communication, like a daily example, the veterinarian would, when a client comes to him, what are typical things that you would emphasize the veterinarian should do in this communication or strengthen this communication?
So I think, you know, I take a step back, and there's been over 40 years of research in human medicine looking at physician-patient, and we've kind of leveraged that in our understanding of veterinary client or veterinary professional client communication. We now have 20 years or more of research in veterinary medicine that can help inform those interactions we have in the exam room in veterinary practice every day. And when I look at that research at a very high level, I can really break the communication down between a veterinary professional and a client into two sort of patterns, again, very high level. One is what we call a veterinarian-centered approach, and it's been equated to being like a shot put, where we take the great knowledge that we have, we develop that into a really well-conceived message, and we launch it up into the air like a shot put and let it slam down onto our client. The other approach, or general approach, is what we call a relationship-centered approach, where it recognizes that within any interaction, there are two individuals, and it's through a process of sharing information back and forth that we can develop relationship, we can find common ground, and through that common ground, find a way for moving forward that both parties are ultimately invested and committed. And in our work, we see that both of those approaches to communication happen in veterinary practice, and we've done research that demonstrates that when a relationship centered approach is taken, we found associations with client satisfaction at the end of those visits. We found an association with clients' adherence specific to a project where we looked at dental or surgical recommendations. And so how we do interact with clients in the examination room impacts the outcomes that are important to all veterinary professionals in terms of the things we're trying to achieve every day. And I think that that example extends to all other aspects of veterinary practice in terms of the team member to team member communication and the outcomes we're trying to achieve through that, but also in terms of veterinary practice and the relationship with industry. And so thinking about building that relationship rather than just launching information, I think many times is important for us to consider in terms of supporting the relationship and getting the outcomes that we're after.
Before maybe we go into specific, you know, questions, maybe a high level again, what would be a proper way, you know, for a veterinarian to kind of address any questions, right? And what is the biggest mistake you see that is done?
Yeah, so I think I wouldn't say it's a mistake. I would see it as being an opportunity per se. And I think the thing that I see happen, and I can use a nutrition example, is that as veterinary professionals, we are a find it, fix it profession. And so we very quickly identify a problem. We want to move into fix mode, which is oftentimes that shot put approach where we have great evidence, we have a solution, and we want to provide that with our client or provide that to our client. And so I think the piece that gets missed there is that every client is different. Every client in the relationship with their animal is different and their situation is different. And so if we don't learn a little bit about that first, we almost set ourselves up for running into challenges in making or applying the evidence-based approach that we want to solving whatever issue that we've identified in veterinary medicine. And so a couple of years ago, we published a paper where we had put cameras up in the corner of the examination room, looked at over 280 interactions. From those interactions, we identified times where the veterinarian made a recommendation or a proposal for a long-term nutrition change for the animal involved in that interaction. And we were curious to know, well, what was clients' responses to that proposal or recommendation? And what we found was 55% of the time, clients overtly pushed back on the veterinarian's recommendation. Now, the other 45% of the time, they either took it up or they didn't give any kind of reaction to the veterinarian. And to be honest, it's those ones where you get no reaction that's like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do with this. And yet we're quite intrigued that like 55% of the time, clients were showing overt resistance to a veterinarian's long-term nutrition recommendation or proposal. And so we dug into that to look, well, what is the basis that clients are using to push back on this nutrition proposal or recommendation? And we found the number one thing was pet preference. So clients felt like their pet were really picky eaters and they were concerned about changing the food, or they'd already tried to change the food before and the client or the pet didn't respond well to that. And so pet preference was the number one reason. Number two were multi-pet households, and any veterinary professional can appreciate client has three cats. One cat should be on a food. The other two shouldn't be on how, you know, clients like, how am I ever going to manage that piece? The third most common was the veterinarian had a health concern that they were using as the basis for making their nutrition or change recommendation. And the client was already or felt like they were already doing something to address it. So an example might be veterinarians concerned with the oral health of an animal. And so the veterinarian is recommending a dental diet, and yet the client's like, well, I feed dental treats a couple times a week, isn't that enough? And then the fourth most common was the pet was already on the food that the veterinarian was recommending, which is those moments where we kind of have those oops moments. And so when we actually sat back and looked at this, what we came to realize was that all of these factors, pet preference, multi-pet household, already trying something to address the concern that was raised or already on the food, are things that could have been brought out earlier on through a more comprehensive history to understand our client, their animal, and their situation. And it's not that resistance is bad. Resistance actually gives us something to work with. Yet when we face resistance, we have to kind of catch up to sort of figure out, well, how are we going to make a plan that's going to work moving forward with this client? Whereas if we can gather this information up front, understand our client, their animal, and their situation, we can actually bring that information into our recommendation, which gives it a much better chance of success. And so I think to your question earlier, that breakdown is we very quickly move into making a recommendation when we see a problem, where some of that time I think needs to be invested in learning a little bit about our client, their animal, their situation, and tailoring that recommendation to the individual client, patient, and situation.
So a common answer here often is the time of a consultation, right? So obviously what you just explained is a very crucial part to get the client to know each other. So how do you balance this kind of a little bit? Or how would you recommend a veterinarian to approach that? This is really important time spent with the clients.
Yeah, so it's a great question. It is one of the most common concerns we hear in our research from veterinary professionals is just the time pressures and how do you manage that? And, you know, when we're teaching communication skills to help with gathering this comprehensive history, we're often encouraging people to consider asking open-ended questions or inquiry questions. Inquiries that really allow a client to share information, to share their story so that we can learn about it. And the concern is, well, that's going to take a lot of time. And so I think a few things. One, we've done studies now, a couple of studies around the use of open-ended questions. One was very specific to nutrition, where we did, again, an observational study, and we identified that when initiating a nutrition conversation, many times veterinarians started off with a question, and it was a very consistent question across veterinarians within our sample. And I've since had the opportunity to explore this through continuing education and different places around the world. And it seems to be a question that gets used regardless if you're here in Canada, where I am, in the US, where you are, Jan, or anywhere in the world. And that's, what kind of food are you feeding? And so we're very curious, given that it's pervasively used by veterinary professionals, how does that work? And what we found is that most clients treat that as a closed-ended question and gave very limited information, often brand-related information. It didn't really create that engagement, that relationship-centered component to it. And in many situations, it actually created some defensiveness amongst clients, which I've come to appreciate. You know, you have a client that's sitting in a waiting room. What are they usually staring at in that waiting room? It's usually one or two brands of food. And then it transitions into the examination room. The technician or veterinarian starts the nutrition conversation. And the first question is, what kind of food are you feeding? Client's thinking, well, it's not what I saw it in the waiting room. And so I've got to defend what I'm feeding. And so it's not to say we don't want to know, because we do want to know what they're feeding. It's not to say we shouldn't have that out in the waiting room. There's, you know, practice management work to support that. Yet it does suggest that we need to look at a different way to approach this. And so we actually followed this up with a study where we sent a research assistant into exam rooms before the veterinarian went in, and they were randomly assigned to ask one of three questions. One of them was that, what kind of food are you feeding? And when we did that, it acted very much like our observational research, where we typically got brand related information. And on average, it took 15 seconds for clients to respond. We then randomly assigned the research assistant to go in and ask a question we had adopted from human nutrition, which was, tell me everything Rory eats throughout a day, starting first thing in the morning, right through to the end of the day. And the thing I like about it is it's asking for everything right up front, but it's also providing some structure to aid recall, which was first thing in the morning, right through to the end of the day. So the client starts, well, I get up, I do this, and I feed them that, and so it just helps with recall. And what we found was that with the tell me question, we got 3.5 times more information than that what question that most veterinary professionals use. And yet it took 28.6 seconds for clients to respond. So it did take a little bit longer, yet on average, 28.6 seconds longer. And my argument would be, how many of those closed-ended questions would we need to ask at 15 seconds a pop to get the same amount of information? And so I do think that it can take longer. Sometimes it's not going to take longer to ask those open-ended questions, but the information we gather better positions us to avoid some of that resistance we've seen in our related study, which actually allows us to move faster through those other parts of the interaction. Just quickly, we did another study looking at beginning of appointments. So again, camera in the corner of the examination room, and we specifically looked at veterinarian solicitation of clients' concerns at the beginning of an appointment. And we found that a third of veterinarians actively ask clients, so what brings you in today? What concerns do you have? And we found in that study that when veterinarians asked it in an open-ended manner, what concerns do you have today versus a closed-ended manner, do you have any concerns today? Statistically, the client shared significantly more concerns with the open-ended approach. Took clients on average 5 seconds to respond with a closed-ended question, and on average 13 seconds to respond with an open-ended question. So again, for another 8 seconds, you're getting significantly more concerns. And what we also know from that study is if you don't solicit concerns at the beginning of the appointment, you're 4 times more likely to get a concern raised by the client at the end, those doorknob concerns where you're like, ah. And so if you think about efficiency, if you don't get those concerns up front and create a plan that's going to maximize your use of time, getting that doorknob concern is either going to result in having to blow your schedule out to address that concern, ignore it, which probably isn't going to contribute to client satisfaction, Or maybe you can manage it in another way with a drop-off or another member of the team. Yeah, by having it out up front, it just helps you with efficiency by setting an agenda with the client. So as much as there are concerns about the time element, I do think that in the end, as we develop these skills, they actually, in many cases, can create some efficiencies. And sometimes it will take a little longer. Sometimes it'll be a little less, but even when it takes a little longer, we're talking like a minute or two. We're not talking like 15, 20 minutes longer. So I would really encourage people to invest in that upfront information gathering, because I do think that it kind of supports the conversation later on. And we know through a study that was done a long time ago that as veterinary professionals, we tend to focus on education and counseling. I think it's 48% of our time is spent there, and only 9% of our time is spent with information gathering. And so I think it's shifting a bit of that up into the front with the hope that it makes our interactions more fruitful in terms of what we learn, more fruitful in being able to tailor a recommendation to our client, their patient, and their situation, and more fruitful in maximizing our efficiency in the exam room.
No, that's fascinating and makes completely sense. And I think that's really, you know, eye-opening, really, when you think through this.
It's time for our famous three.
Kemin Pet Food and Rendering is driven to deliver safe, high-quality ingredients that enhance pet food and help pets live their best lives. Every day, we provide specialized expertise, innovative solutions, and dedicated support across the value chain. From freshness and palatability to nutrition, health and well-being, and tailored services. At Kemin, we take science as seriously as cats take cat stuff. Expert insight, meticulous testing, and decades of research go into every ingredient we create, ensuring consistent quality and proven performance. Longer, fuller pet lives start with Kemin.
Let's focus a little bit on nutrition specifically. I think there's a lot of diet trends out there nowadays, right? So sometimes the client comes obviously and says, you know, I hear online or marketing and so on, this diet is better than other diets and so on. How can we help here, this communication? How can we foster trusted brands, and how to help the veterinarian discuss this with the clients?
So I think there's a lot of layers to that. And I think the first is recognizing a client that comes with information, they've done work, they've invested in that information. And there's research not in veterinary medicine and human medicine that suggests that when a client comes in with a pre-existing idea, if we just tell them what we think that is counter to that idea, they're going to leave believing what they came in believing. Yet, if we take some time to unpack and learn from our client about what they've learned, where they've learned it, why they're invested in that information, it better positions us to work with them to come to a place where we can share information that our client's more likely to be open to, because we've understand and been able to relate it to what they were looking for in the first place by going out and getting that information. And so I think this is a really important point in terms of taking more of a relationship-centered approach, where I'm tossing you a frisbee, you toss me that frisbee back, versus the shot putter veterinarian-centered approach to when clients come in with information from another source. I also think that, and our research would support this, is that clients are looking for options. Most clients, I wouldn't say absolutely every client. I think there was an AHA study done many years ago that said 90% of clients want to be presented with options regardless of whether or not we think as veterinary professionals that they can afford them. Our research supports that many clients are looking for options and want to be involved in decision making. And we have this quote in one of our studies where a client talks about, by being presented options, I don't feel like I'm being sold something. It looks like, you know, it gives me the autonomy to make that choice in terms of decision making. And so that's really, I think we've heard this from clients for a long time, that they're looking for options. It's probably even stronger today than it was 20 years ago. Yet we're also now in our research with veterinary professionals starting to hear their transition, their approach to this too, where this whole concept of spectrum of care, contextualized care, and offering clients options and working through them so that we really develop a plan for moving forward that fits them, their animal, and their situation. And so from a working backwards standpoint, I think it's important to not just present options, yet we need to have options presented in a way that clients understand them. They understand the difference in value between them in terms of what it offers for the pet and the animal, which comes back to the relationship, right? How do we support you and your relationship? What's important to you as a pet owner when making options around these areas? And to your point, Jan, I would agree. I mean, I tell people nutrition is one of the hardest conversations just because of all the options that are out there. And so if we can help narrow those down, We can support a client and their animal by understanding what's important to them. And this is where I think industry can play a role too. And I've worked with a few different industry partners to help really take the evidence that they have and start thinking about how do we support veterinary professionals in translating that into information that they can use to really explain to a client where the value is for their animal, and not the value in terms from an evidence medical standpoint, but the value in terms of what is important to them, which is oftentimes how it's going to contribute to that animal's lifespan, how it's going to contribute to their quality of life, all of those types of things. And I think that that's really important, is understanding for this individual client what is important to them in their relationship and making these decisions. To develop a relationship between a veterinary professional and a client by exploring options and going through that process to arrive at a plan that is going to be tailored for that individual client, patient, and animal. And then industry, building relationships with the veterinary profession by supporting with information and not just scientific evidence on how our product works, but going that next step to saying, here's how it benefits the long-term health and well-being of that client's animal.
So to kind of summarize in a simple way would be understanding the client comes first, right?
Yeah. I mean, for me, the foundation of any recommendation is that comprehensive history. And if you skip over it, like our research in nutrition highlighted, really solidified that for me, you tend to run into problems with resistance. Whereas if you can get that understanding up front, you're likely going to create some efficiencies in that back end by tailoring a recommendation to a client in a way that's going to work for them. And so I think it's really important to do that. And through our work, we've developed various sort of tools and things to support veterinary professionals. So we developed something called a value matrix, which we published in the Journal of the American Veterinary Medical Association last year, which is a communication aid that can first get us thinking as a practice and a team through what are the different options and then what are the advantages and different disadvantages of those different options. Yet it can also be used as a client communication aid where a client may be really struggling with a decision to kind of lay out what the different options are associated with that. So we do that along the left-hand side. Across the top, we tease apart the different advantages and disadvantages, often focusing on benefits to the client and the animal. And then we use some kind of indicator to indicate which option brings these benefits. And it's amazing. It takes a lot of information that can be overwhelming when you just verbalize it and support that conversation with a visual aid. So again, this is a complex conversation. It's going to have elements that will be challenging. And so looking for ways to support that, first off, by getting that comprehensive history, then thinking about how you present your options and what are the advantages and disadvantages between each. So people aren't just making cost-based decisions, and they're making value-based decisions. And then working with a client to find what their preference-sensitive decision is to that situation, I think leads to better outcomes, which is ultimately what we're looking for, is better outcomes for patients, better outcomes for our clients, but also better outcomes for ourselves and our teams.
So we are kind of at the end of our episodes. So I think it's really fascinating. I think this is something that obviously we need to spread over this information. I had one question, so a little bit outside the box. In the beginning, you said one of the biggest important thing in the communication also being self-centered, right? Not self-centered, but, you know, being self, you know, like things. Do you have any suggestions, resources, or books that you would recommend to somebody?
Yeah, I don't have a specific book. And I mean, transparently, it probably comes back to I spend a lot of time reading papers, students' papers, so I'm not diving into a lot of books. And yet, you know, really what that is pointing to is emotional intelligence. And so I think anything that you can spend to kind of help you in becoming more reflective in your practice, which is a lot of what we spend time helping students with in terms of getting them to spend time reflecting on their thoughts, their ideas, but also others' thoughts and ideas is important in relation to that. And so I think any resource that is out there to support the development of emotional intelligence or support you in continuing to develop that, I think is critical, because that's a big part of first thinking about yourself and how you're responding to a situation and understanding how your response is influencing that interaction. And so I don't have a specific recommendation for a book yet. That would be the area I would encourage people to explore.
But this area is very okay. We can find it very important. Thank you so much, Jason. So it was really a pleasure and eye-opening, and really reflects how understanding the client is really so important. That helps a lot also in the communication about nutrition. So that concludes another episode of the Pet Food Science Podcast, presented to you by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is invaluable to us. Until next time, this is Jan Sogodolski from the Bedford Science Podcast signing off.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.